translation. Urvasi replied, "O most handsome man, who is the woman whose mind and sight would not be attracted by you? If a woman takes shelter of your chest, she cannot refuse to enjoy with you in a sexual relationship." And the purport is very short. When a beautiful man and a beautiful woman unite together and embrace one another, how within the three worlds can they check their sexual relationship? Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.45 says, "Yan mitunadi grihamedi shukham hi tucham." That's where the purport ends. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanjagalpatarubhyascha Krupasindubhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So a series of verses there, and coming to a very short purport. So asking for all the blessings of all the Vaishnavas here, that we can speak some words to illuminate what Prabhupada is saying. First of all, Prabhupada just quoted the Sanskrit there, and there was no translation either, if you noted. It was just one part of the verse. So that was from Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj is speaking, that verse is, Prahlad Maharaj is speaking to Narsimhadev. 7.4.45. So we didn't know what it meant, it just said the Sanskrit. So the translation of that verse is, "Sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Griha maidis, so-called grihasthas, who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is the source of distress. The creepiness, the fools, who are just the opposite of brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensual enjoyment. Those who are dhira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching, are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals." So that was just Prahlad Maharaj. And of course, Prahlad Maharaj was a grihastha as well, and he's speaking this verse. So it's interesting. Interesting. And Prabhupada differentiates griha maidis and grihasthas equally. In case we start pointing our fingers everywhere, Prabhupada is saying griha maidis in this verse. Those that have no spiritual knowledge whatsoever. Equally, he speaks about brahmanas and kripanas. Two words which are opposite. Kripana means those that are miserly. And one translation of brahmana is those that are very broad-minded. Broad-minded. So in Burijan's book, in the Gita, he speaks about this differentiation of brahmanas and kripanas. And he says that if you have great wealth, but if you're a kripana, you never give it away. You keep it all. Referring to the fact that the great wealth that we all have is spiritual life. And brahmanas, when they have this wealth, they share it with others. They share this tremendously with others. Whenever Prabhupada speaks about this principle, he always quotes, I was looking on the folio just this morning, and Prabhupada always quotes so many times one famous verse whenever he speaks on this principle of sex life. Anyone remember that one? From the Sri Sampradaya. Yamunacharya. He quotes Yamunacharya so often, who was obviously a great acharya, a king in South India. And Prabhupada always quotes him after this, Yadavadi Mama Cheta Krishna Padara Vindiyo Nava Nava Rasa, where Prabhupada says, and this verse it means specifically, that since I have been engaged in the transcendental service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex life, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl with distaste. So Yamunacharya formerly was a great king, and with probably so many wives equally, great king in that area. So he specifically had realization on this, and Prabhupada, whenever he, if you hear him speaking, Prabhupada, we say, I spit at the thought of this, and Prabhupada would always say, I spite. Pronouncing it like that, I spite at the thought of this principle. When one sannyasi, he came to see Srila Prabhupada. And he said, Prabhupada, this is in Calcutta, he said, I'm having difficulties in my ashram. I'm thinking about my former wife. So Prabhupada, he said to him, he said, just last night, even me, I was dreaming about my wife. And he said, just see how strong this sentiment is, he said, that so long ago, I had met my wife, but still I was dreaming. He said, but our order of sannyas means we cannot see our wife again. He said, we cannot see our wife again. So specifically, Prabhupada, in that story in Calcutta specifically, he said to him, he said, no, you should continue and not let these things disturb you. That was the advice that he gave him at that time. And in our scriptures, there are so many stories that come to mind of the same story of Pururava, Urvasi, same thing, same principle, where we hear of Vishvamitra, Menaka, when we hear of Sobari Muni, and the story with the fishes in his, but there's one story which is there from the Indian history, which is a king by the name of King Bhartrihari. Bhartrihari was a king who ruled in the 7th century. And he was a great poet as well. And he loved his queen tremendously. And he was very infatuated with the queen, just like we were reading about Pururava and Urvasi. So that whenever he would meet her, he would compose so many verses. So once when he met his wife, he composed a series of verses. They're called Sringara Satak, which are 100 poems in glorification of the beauty of his wife. You can read them all. It's Sringara Satak. So he immediately upon seeing his wife, he composed these 100 verses. And Bhartrihari, because he was a great king, many sages would come and visit him. So one time, a great sage, he came to see him, and he said, my dear king, I want to give you a great gift. And he gave him a ring. And he said that whoever keeps this ring, their life will become most auspicious. So the king thought, ah, wonderful. And you know what it is, if you receive a tremendous gift, you always want to share it with the person that you love the most. So he said to the queen, he said, I want to give you this ring and your life will become most auspicious simply by keeping this ring. So the king then went to battle and he won a few wars and he came back. And when he came back, the courtesan girl who fans him every day, she came to see him And she said, King Bhartrihari, I have a tremendous gift for you. And she gave the ring to him. And the king looked at the ring and he said, I recognize this ring. This is my ring. How did you get this ring? So then he did some investigation. And then after that investigation, he wrote some more poems. Because he had written 100 verses in praise of love and everything else. So he wrote 100 verses not in praise of all of these things, but in praise of renunciation. What had happened was that he gave the ring to his wife, the queen. But the queen, she also said that, you know, whatever amazing thing you receive, you want to share it with the person that you love the most. So the queen, she didn't love the king. She actually loved the general of the army of the king. So she took that ring and she gave it to the general and said, you keep this ring with you in battle, you will always be protected. So the general of the army, he took that ring and he thought, wow, what a wonderful gift. But the general, he didn't love the queen either. He loved the courtesan girl who used to fan the king. So he went and he gave that ring to the courtesan girl. And she didn't love the general either. She actually loved the king. So she thought, let me give this ring to the king because I love him the most. So Sringara Satak, this is King Bhartrihari. It's an interesting lesson on the futility of love. And, you know, this story of Pururava is very much like that, isn't it? Yeah. Of all the different things that are going on, as all the soaps are about that, isn't it? Sakshi Gopal was speaking about Peyton Place, and you can tell he's from the 70s and 60s, because it's not around anymore. and it goes into EastEnders now, and other things, which is the same thing that's the Bhagavatam speaking about. And whenever these verses come up, we all wake up all of a sudden because all the philosophy stops and all these different riddles come in. So all of a sudden we start thinking, my God, what is this about? So Prabhupada often will always quote also Rishabdev whenever he speaks about this principle of sex life in the 7th chapter and the famous verse, 7th canto. Yes. Pumsha striya mituni bhava metam. Tayoramitu ridaya granti mahu atagriya shetra suta aptaviter janasya mohoyam ahamameti, which is that the basic principle of material life is this attraction between male and female. And what happens is that ridaya granti mahi, that when male and female come to, when man and woman come together, their hearts are tied in a knot. And Prabhupada often speaks about hridaya granti, the knot in the heart. Knot in the heart. And what happens? Because of this, atak griya kshetra suta apta viter. So the first thing is that you will need a griya, a house. Prabhupada says, if you are married, he said, you will need a house immediately. Otherwise, you cannot be grihastha. Grihastha means one who has a griha, a house. And it's interesting because the word kshetra is used after that, land. So often now, you know, you buy a plot of land to build a house. But actually, Prabhupada speaks about the fact that previously, you would have a house, but you would also have some land because you would grow your own food. Everybody lived like that. They grew their own food. They didn't need to buy anything or barter with anything. They're different currencies. So Prabhupada says, kshetra refers to the fact that you grow your own food. And sutta, and of course after the house and the land, children are there. And whenever children are there, sutta apta, you have friends and relatives immediately. And how do you run all of these things of the house, the land, the children, the relatives? How do you run it all? Prabhupada says, Vithair, you need money. Otherwise you can't run it. And because of this whole concept, he says, we go into a consciousness of janasya mohuyam ahammameti, which means the concept of the principle of increasing illusion, Prabhupada says, of I and mine. It increases the illusion of this world because we start to think I and mine when actually nothing is ours. Nothing is ours. We don't own anything. The only thing we own is Swatantra Ratna. The only thing, we don't even own this body or the mind or the senses because they're all material. We don't own them. But the only thing, they're all owned by Krishna, of course. But what do we own? Swatantra Ratna, the jewel of free will. It's the only thing we own. The jewel of free will. As I often say in my lectures outside, it's life is a journey from B to D, the alphabets, A, B, C, D. From B to D, it's a journey from birth to death. And what's the letter in between B and D? C. Hopefully everyone got that one right. It's C. Of course, Jagadatri would be teaching that every day to the children. So it's C. So I always say the C refers to this Swatantra Ratna, your choice. You have a choice. That each one of us have a choice from a moment-to-moment basis to do the right thing or to do the wrong thing. And we own that. This is what we own. So, you know, often we... I was just thinking about hundreds of things with this, but often... the story of Bilava Mangal Thakur, the Bhaktivedanta players did a long time ago, you might remember that. And it's very, very similar to this. It's very similar to this story. If we look at the life of Surdas, or Bilava Mangal Thakur, he was a Brahmin by the name of Shilana. Shilana Brahmin. But he, went into bad habits. And in due course, he was visiting a prostitute by the name of Chintamani. And even the night that his father died, and the next morning he was meant to perform the funeral rites, this attraction, this lust is so powerful that it drove him not to stay for the funeral even. And he went that night to see Chintamani, and we know the story. That, you know, there was a thunderstorm that night, so Chintamani lived on the other side of the river. And he wanted to go and see her, so the boatman said, we're not taking you across. So Shilana said, no way, I'm going. And he jumped on a log, and he crossed the river. And then when he got to the house, she was on the first floor or something, and the house was locked, so he got on a rope. And he climbed all the way into the house of Chintamani. And when Chintamani saw him, she said, what are you doing here? It's the dead of night and your father has passed away and you're meant to be performing the funeral rites, Shilana. What is wrong with you? And then she looked out of the window. The log that he was floating on wasn't a log. It was a dead body. He was so bewildered that he jumped onto a dead body and he went across. And the rope that he thought he climbed on wasn't a rope. It was a snake, a large snake. So one can become so bewildered. So of course Surdas, he realized, my God, Chintamani, what is she? He came to his senses. Takes a lot to come to our senses sometimes. The story sort of is telling us. And he of course became Bilava Mangal Thakur. And the story carries on as we know. And very beautifully depicted by the Bhaktivedanta players. Jai Krishna does it so well there. And of course, later on, he pokes his eyes out because he says, these eyes are leading me into so many difficulties, because he wanted to enjoy with another Brahmin's wife. So he just said that these eyes, I want to poke them out. So the fever of lust within the sense of sight is so powerful. Imagine that the fever of lust within the sense of sight, within the firefly, it's so powerful that it will jump or dive into the fire just to enjoy the fire, but it kills itself. Kills itself. That principle is there. But what we learn from Surdas or Bilva Mangal Thakur is that really the bliss is in Vairagya. Detachment, Krishna consciousness. But today, the bliss is no longer in Vairagya. Instead, life has changed. The bliss is in Viagra. This is the debate. That the Bhagavatam is speaking about the bliss of Vairagya and they're speaking about Viagra. Krishna has designed our bodies so that naturally and gradually we give up sex desire as we progress and we get older. Unfortunately, what we find in today's society is the opposite. It's a sex-crazed world. Whether it's the internet, whether it's the billboard, and even if you go to the supermarkets, you're just innocently standing there at the checkout counter and all the magazine of half-naked men and women are there at the checkout counter. Impulse buying, isn't it? They call it impulse buying. So people on impulse will just buy those things which are at the counter. Jai Shishi Radha Gokula Nandaki. And a debate that they had, because schools are very sensitive about these things, because what does every child do when they leave school? When they go home every day? Well, different things in different places. But generally, I remember I would always go to the sweet shop. Isn't it? You go to the sweet shop after school. And the debate in the education field years ago when was this principle that what's the consequence that we have all of these things, magazines racked up, that young children are seeing it. So then you know what the law was, that they cannot be at the bottom shelf. The adult magazines, they have to be on the top shelf. So that was how they got out of it. That's all they said. We have to put them on the top shelf instead of the bottom shelf. Two of the consequences of this, of these images, is that young children become interested in sex life much earlier now. It's a consequence of this. Not just the magazines, it's just the internet, everything. Movies, whatever. And the second consequence of it is that the elderly are finding ways to reawaken their sexual relationships. Interesting. This is the consequence of simply the internet, magazines and different things. Now, most people all agree that, you know, okay, children shouldn't be interested in it. But, you know, when it comes to, none of them will support the fact that the elderly should give up sexual desires. They should persist in old age with this. And hence, they came out with Viagra. Not the other one. Hopefully they should have come out with the other one. This drug that, you know, how it's available to each one of us. Isn't it? Once I saw a T-shirt which said, "Already disturbed, do not disturb." You know, Kali Yuga is such a thing that we're already disturbed. You don't need, you know, these different stimulants to disturb you. And we're already disturbed. Do not disturb. And why does the Bhagavatam and the Gita warn against all of these things is because sex desire is so strong that without spiritual training, even at the time of death, we will meditate upon it. Even at the time of death, we will start thinking about this. And Prabhupada, to support this assertion, he gives the story of a king and his minister. And when the king asked the minister, he said, when will the desire for sex, when would it end? And the minister said, it lasts all the way to the point of death. And the king said, I don't believe you. And then the minister said, no, I'll take you to see one of your citizens who's dying. But please bring along with you your beautiful daughter. And Prabhupada then tells a story that when the king arrived, and you know, the citizen would be so amazed to see that the king had come at the moment when he's dying. But the dying man, instead of looking at the king, he was looking at the beautiful daughter of the king. So the king then realized, my God, even to the point of death, this desire is there. So you know, often we may preach about this, and we say that if your consciousness is not correct, then at the time of death, whatever you think of, you become. Yam yam vapi smaram tyajate ante kalevaram. Whatever we think of, we become. So people are so engrossed in this principle that Prabhupada often speaks about the fact that in their next life they will become monkeys and pigeons. Prabhupada very strong said you will become monkeys and pigeons. Why? Because both of these species, they have no guilt and no inhibitions. And they can enjoy 1,000 times a day this pleasure. So, for us specifically, we need to pray. And we need to pray for the desire to desire, to desire, to become free of sexual cravings. I was just going to, secondly, just look at those verses in the Gita, the third chapter, which speaks of this. And that is that why do people do the wrong thing and even act improperly even when it's in the Shastra? Sometimes we know what is the right thing. We even want to do the right thing. But there's a fever or a power that forces us to do the wrong thing. This is the question Arjuna is asking. And what is that force, isn't it? Everybody knows if you keep smoking cigarettes, you'll get lung cancer or whatever. But still, you know, people will continue smoking. Ridainanda Maharaj tells the story of the man who got cancer in the mouth and everything else. And then finally, they had to cut a hole in his trachea here in the neck so he could breathe from the neck. But this force, which is so powerful, that when the doctors went to see him, he was smoking the cigar from his neck. So this is the power of lust. So it can bewilder you even to that. So Krishna in the third chapter, 37, he says, Kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudabaha mahasanu maha papma. So he says that it is lust only, Arjuna, which is the greatest enemy of this world. We often tend to think that this devotee is my enemy, or this person's my enemy, or they're my enemy. Life, unfortunately, life is like that. Even in a Krishna conscious society, we tend to think they're my enemies and they're whatever. But actually Krishna is saying that the real enemy is already within. It's actually lust, he's saying. And he calls it Maha Virinam, which he means the greatest enemy. So in Rajaniti, which are instructions for Kshatriyas on diplomacy, it is said that an enemy is controlled with four things. The first one is words. So if you have an enemy, you control him with good words. Try and pacify him. Gifts, Hopefully some Mangalarti sweets will do the trick. A position. You give a position to someone, they don't, not the enemy anymore, they're happy. And finally, punishment. Baladev Vidyabhushana, he describes that lust is maha papam, the mightiest enemy. And all the other methods will not work, only the danda will work, the stick will work. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would often speak of this, that every morning when you get up, you should beat your mind with a shoe 100 times. And every night when you go to sleep, you should beat your mind with a broomstick 100 times. So just to give us that idea, that, you know, I don't know why there's a shoe and a broomstick, but maybe different things of the day or something. You know, you put your shoes on in the morning and you're sweeping the room at night, I'm not sure. But he says, but it's the principle that you beat the mind 100 times. You know, every morning when we get up, it is, isn't it? We don't want to get up. We want the mind wants to do what it wants to do. So you have to beat it. So similarly, when this power comes of lust, we have to get the shoe out. We have to get the broomstick out. And Krishna in the Gita, he carries on. And you know, actually, if we look at this, you know, every day in school, we would have to recite Jesus' prayer. Everybody went to school here, well, in England. And you remember we would all recite the prayer, isn't it? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, and so on, so on. What struck me, and I remembered from that, which is very important for today's verses, and it's a beautiful thing, actually, beautiful statement from the Christian tradition, and it says, and lead us not into temptation. And it's so profound, very small thing, which we may have ignored when we're in school. But when we read the Gita and you think about it, praying to the Lord, lead us not into temptation. Because temptation is such a thing that from a moment-to-moment basis you have a choice to do the right thing or the wrong thing. So Krishna continues in text 38 about this lust, and he says that as fire is covered by smoke, mirrors covered by dust, and the embryos covered by the womb, the living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. And of course, Prabhupada says something interesting in that purport. And he says that in the human form of life, one can conquer the enemy lust by the cultivation of Krishna consciousness under able guidance. You can't conquer it on your own. You need able guidance. And hence, you know, we have so many devotees that guide us in our spiritual life. Through our own endeavors, it's not possible to overcome lust. We need the grace of Guru and we need the grace of Krishna equally in order to conquer this enemy. And where is the enemy situated? In the next verse, Krishna says, the enemy is situated. If we know that's the greatest enemy, if you're a strategist, if you know there's an enemy, you want to know where is the enemy now. And Krishna says, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Prabhupada, in the purport, he says, lust is the greatest enemy because it covers our knowledge of the absolute truth. And, you know, before a battle, if you want to know the enemy is here, how do you deal with him? So Krishna, in the next verse, tells us how to attack this lust, and he says the following thing, that, O Bharat, O Arjuna, son of Bharat, O best of Bharats, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of lust by regulating the senses. So we may wonder, how do we control this lust? Is it the senses? Is it the mind? Is it the intelligence? So Krishna here very amazingly saying you begin with the senses. Why? Because the senses are the grossest. And being gross, they're easier to control. We might think, no, the mind is easier and the intellect, but Krishna's saying no. He says you begin with the senses. And how do we control the senses? Automatically, this is done in Vaidhi Bhakti. We come to the morning program, and if you come from 4:30 till now 8:30, practically all the 64 items of devotional service are present within it. There was a famous pianist, his name was Paderewski. And he was asked, do you practice every day? And he practiced every day for 50 years, piano, even though he was a master at it. But still every day he would practice. So Vaidhi Bhakti is about that. It's about practice. And Paderewski, he said that if I don't practice for one day, I notice it. If I don't practice for 2 days, my friends notice it. And if I don't practice for 3 days, everybody notices it. He says, why? Because when I play, I notice on the first day that I haven't been practicing. Second day, everyone notices. And the third day, everyone know in the big performances that I haven't been practicing. So I thought that was interesting. That, you know, when we are not regulating our devotional service, we begin to notice it. If we don't come to the morning program for one day, we notice, isn't it? 2 days, everyone else notices in the ashram, how come you're not coming? And the third day, the temple president will come and see you as well and say, how come you're not coming to the morning? A bit like Paderewski. 1 day, 2 day, and 3 days. When Beethoven, he, obviously a great musician as well, and he composed so many amazing things. So he was playing for the royalty. And when he finished playing for the royalty came up and they spoke to him and said, Beethoven, you are a genius. You are gifted in music. And Beethoven went to the queen and said, Madam, this genius practices 10 hours a day for the last 47 years. Meaning that even someone may look like an amazing musician, they still practice. And they have always practiced. Even if they're gifted. So what to speak of us? What to speak of us? We have to practice. And Vaidhi Bhakti is about that, practicing all of these things. We may not win today. We may lose the battle. But tomorrow's another day. We can fight again. And it's not about, bhakti is not about losing the battles every day. Bhakti is all about winning the war at the end of the day. You may lose so many battles in the day with your mind, with your senses, with your intelligence. But Vaidhi Bhakti is all about the fact that you continue, you carry on, you keep at it. Like Paderewski said, like Beethoven had said, and then we'll find, and just concluding on it, my time's run out. Time's run out. Prabhupada says something very interesting. He says that transcendental knowledge has been described as having the power to purify our consciousness of passion and raise it to goodness. So Krishna's warning that be careful of the mode of passion because it will invoke lust. So transcendental knowledge does that. So why are we studying transcendental knowledge? Why are we in the Bhagavatam class? Because it will raise our consciousness from passion to goodness. But now in the final verse, Prabhupada is saying in this chapter, Krishna has certified transcendental knowledge as being able to award our intelligence the strength to overcome lusty desires. Very interesting. that transcendental knowledge will award our intelligence the strength to overcome these difficulties that we may face. And Raghunath Das Goswami, in his Manasiksha, he speaks about the highwayman of lust. The highwayman of lust. He calls him the Daku. And he says, the highwayman of lust has come to rob me of my greatest treasure. What's our greatest treasure, everyone? Raghunath Das Goswami, he says, our desire to become Krishna conscious. So the highwayman of lust has come to rob me of my greatest desire, which is the desire, a treasure, to become Krishna conscious. But he will steal everything from me by giving me other desires. So Prabhupada, he says, that one who comes to Krishna consciousness is fortunate. One who doesn't come is unfortunate. But then he says, one who comes and he leaves is the most unfortunate. And, you know, these desires, they come and get us. And finally, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the following. He says, the highwayman, lust, and his friends have bound me up to the neck with the painful rope of wicked deeds. O mind, please scream Krishna, O killer of Bhaka. I will be killed by the highwayman. Do that and he will save you. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that Bhakasura, he represents deceit. Each of the demons, they represent different things. So he says Bhakasura, he represents deceit. What does that mean? Lust comes in as a very nice thing that will make us happy. But its purpose is to slit our throat and steal our wealth. Hence, our intelligence has to be fixed, because if it's not fixed, we will be doomed. Just like if you have bodyguards, the intelligence is like the bodyguards. If the bodyguards are already paid off by the enemy, as you find in all South American countries, isn't it? The general, all of a sudden, he dies in the end because the bodyguards have been bribed. Or even Indira Gandhi, you know, in the end, her own bodyguards killed her. So it is like that. And Subhag Swami, when he was with here, I think he was here, he joined here. I just met him in Mayapur, and he fondly remembers his time with Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very fond of him, I was reading. And whenever Subhag Swami would come, he would ask him to come and sit in front, and he made him his own personal servant. He would speak to him in Bengali. He was doing a degree in chemistry here. And then he joined, and Prabhupada, very fond of him. So Subhag Swami, he asked him the same question. He said, Prabhupada, this lust is giving me so much difficulties, living in London, he said. We're living in London, it's impossible to get away from it. So he said, how do we overcome it? So Prabhupada gave these same answers of karma, asha, krodha, asha, all of these things. He says, your intelligence, your senses, vaidhi bhakti. And then at the end of the day, he went to Prabhupada and he asked him in Bengali, same thing. He said, Prabhupada, still this lust is giving me so much difficulties. What is the answer? What is the secret? And Prabhupada said only two words. He said, Govind Icha. How will I conquer it? He said. And Prabhupada said, Govind Icha. Only it is up to Krishna to free you from all of these difficulties. Krishna's desire is the only thing that can do that. And Indrajumna Swami, when he was reflecting on the same thing, he said when he was at the airport and he was Prabhupada's servant, and he was traveling with him, and when Prabhupada was looking at him, you know, his attention drew to the airline hostesses who were going past. And he started looking at them. And then he caught himself that he was with Prabhupada. And he stopped, and Prabhupada saw him, and Prabhupada said to him, beautiful, aren't they? And Prabhupada then said to him, imagine how much more beautiful the Creator is. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaurabhimanande.